This is Christian Okoye, former Kansas City Chiefs. You are listening to Grueling Truth.
Mm. Welcome, everybody, to the NFL's Grueling Truth Legend Show, brought to you by Gridiron Mo, an interactive football app where you get to call what you think the offense or defense should do during a live NFL game and see what all other fans have called also. Check out Gridiron Mo at www.gridironmo.com. I'm your host, as always, for the Legend Show, Mike Goodpaster, and we have a very special guest today. I'm sure if you guys listen to the show, you know I'm a huge Bengals fan. I was born the same year they were. I have a guy on today that I think should be in the Professional Football Hall of Fame. Was the best cornerback, I think, in Bengals history. Help me welcome to the show, Leapin' Lamar Parrish. How you doing, almost called you Leapin'. How you doing, Lamar?
Oh, fine. You could call me Leapin'. That's where everybody knows me about anyway, Mike. How you doing today?
All right. Great. It's always to have a bear. Always great to have a Bengals legend on.
Hey, well, I'm great, and I'm happy to be here.
All right, so tell us a little bit about your early life, when you first started playing football, what drew you to it, and then how you ended up at Lincoln University. Also, I know you started off as a running back.
Hey, right, you know, the football was a dream of mine, becoming the greatest football player in the world, you know what I'm saying? Not just to be good, but I wanted to be the greatest. And I knew that there were things that I had to do because of my size, you know, that I was always the underdog, that people looked at my size. I played high school ball at about 165 pounds. I went to college as a little boy, you understand? The coach called me a little boy, and I had to prove myself there. He didn't want to give me a chance, and finally I got the chance, and that's all this history, you understand what I mean? But you're correct. I never played defense before. I was a running back, a punt return, kickoff return specialist in college. And I was drafted as an athlete by the Bengals. Thank God to Jack Donaldson and Paul Brown. You know, they drafted me in the seventh round as an athlete. Not ever playing defensive back before, I went and trained myself on the beaches, backpedaling, and coming out of the breaks, running the 40-yard dash, building my stamina up, and, things like that. I was a gifted athlete. I just had to work on things, and thank God that I had a great coach in Coach Weber, who I consider the best coach that ever taught defensive backs. Ken Riley and I really learned a lot from him, and I'm grateful.
Yeah, and Ken Riley, if I remember, I was drafted. He was a quarterback in college.
Yes, he was. Ken was transferred also to a defensive back. So, that goes to show that an athlete could play anywhere that the size would allow him to play. In fact, that they wanted to play me both ways as a rookie, but Paul needs a defensive back. He needed a cornerback, so he said no, that I was going to specialize in defensive backs. And the strike had a lot to do with it because during the year of 1970, and a guy was out on strike, and I had a chance to learn a lot of things one-on-one by Chuck Weber, who I consider the greatest coach that ever taught defensive back, because I was green, I didn't have any bad habits. Chuck taught me from day one techniques and fundamentals, and I never forgot those things, so those things carried me for 13 years.
Now, was the transition from running back to defensive back difficult for you at all, or were you just such a great athlete that no matter what you did, you were going to be great at it?
Not really. I made the transition pretty smoothly because I had great coaching. Coach Weber taught me techniques and fundamentals. You understand what I mean? I was a little awkward in my stance, but he didn't change my stance. He just worked on me. Positioning myself and how to get things done, and I really appreciate that. And
when the Bengals drafted you, did they let you know right then they were going to put you at defensive back?
Yes, they did. Yes, I came in working as a defensive back, punt return, kickoff return specialist. See, they knew I was going to run punt and kickoff back because I've proven that in college. Because of my size, that they just didn't know where to put me at. But they needed defensive backs at the time, and I fit the mold because of my speed and my quickness, my agility, and stuff like that, so that I was taught well.
All right, now you got there. They had a legendary coach and owner, Paul Brown. What was your relationship with Coach Brown like at the beginning?
I'll tell you, Paul was strictly business. You understand me? I admire a lot, and I learned a lot from him. You understand? The organization was phenomenal. You understand me? That we was always punctual. We was always well-trained. We was always disciplined. And I really learned a lot from him. You know, I came as a little boy, but I left there as a man, you know. So I learned a lot from the organization, from the coaches, and Paul Brown, Mike Brown was, hey, you know, they were great guys to me. There. We just had a little differences in the pay scale, you understand me, the contract problem, but that's the only problem that I had. And I looked at that as being business, you understand me, because I know NFL, that stands for not for long. So I was on top of my game, and I needed my work because I was going to the All-Star game the same time that Mel Blount and all those guys are in the Hall of Fame today. And every time they was going, I was going. You understand me? Plus, I was leading the league in everything that was there, punt return, kickoff return, pass interception, you name it. You understand? I led the league in all of those things. So, hey, you know, I made the transition pretty smoothly.
Well, I mean, you had your breakout game had to be the 1970 Buffalo game. You want to tell the listeners a little bit about your game against the Bills?
Well, I tell you, during the preseason, that I had been coming close to breaking a punt return back. I can't recall Paul Brown saying the pair's going to break one soon. And Buffalo was my breakout game. I can't recall. I think it was a kickoff punt return, something back by 83-yard punt return, so on. But, shoot, that's where I made my mark at there, the first game of the season there with Buffalo.
Yeah, and in 1970 season, the Bengals got off to the worst start by any team that ever made the playoffs. You guys started off 1-6, went on a 7-game winning streak to go 8-6 and win the division. What are your biggest memories from that season?
Hey, well, the memories are that I played with a great group of guys, you understand me? That we were like family. We cared about one another. We worked hard. You know, I played with a group of guys that there was no slacking off, you understand? Playing for Coach Paul Brown, that you could not slack off because you had to get the job done. He would find somebody else. And we understood that, but we loved each other. We played the game for each other as a team. And quite naturally that we had great coaching also. And the organization, we was young, you understand me? We was inexperienced, and we made the playoffs our first year there.
Yeah, your first year there, which was only the team's third year in existence, and it's not like today where they try to even the playing field. Back then, they did everything they could to keep the Bengals from being a contender right away just because of how much Paul Brown had dominated the NFL when he was in Cleveland. So, I mean, to make the playoffs in the third year was remarkable. You guys go to Baltimore, lose to Johnny Unitas and the Colts, I think 17-0. 71-72 come, and the Bengals still were lacking a quarterback, Greg Cook. I think he was a rookie of the year in 1969, had the arm injury. You get Kenny Anderson in. And 71-72 were kind of tough. At 73, you guys won the division, 10-4. Actually gave Miami a really good game. You want to talk a little bit about the 73 season?
73 season, when we went down to Miami, that Miami was a dominant team then. As you know, that they kind of beat us up a little bit because during the time that you could cut receivers, you could do all kind of stuff back there. And our receivers caught trouble getting off the line because the linebacker was cutting them, they were chopping them, they were doing all kinds of stuff to them, and we wasn't used to that, so that Miami had a great game plan. They took away our passing attack, which was Isaac Curtis and those guys, you understand me, because, and then we had running back that got hurt, Johnson got hurt, if I can recall, early in the game. And that kind of threw us behind the eight ball there, but they was pretty dominant during that year.
Now, you also played in the defensive backfield, I think 73 through 76. One of the best defensive probably the best defensive backfield in Bengals history, yourself, Ken Riley, Tommy Casanova. You want to talk a little bit about those guys?
Oh yeah, those guys were phenomenal. You understand me? We used to love our passing teams, you know, because we matched up pretty well with anybody. That was Pittsburgh, that was anybody, because of the man-to-man techniques that we was able to play across the board. Therefore, we was able to send a lot of people. We was able to blitz. We was able to adjust our defense to anything they could run. So that those guys was true athletes. You know what I'm saying? Tom Casanova, strong safety. We had Neil Craig, Ken Riley on the other side of me, and we was locked down corners pretty much. You understand me? That we was predominantly man-to-man coverage, and that kind of threw teams off because I don't care who we played, we was gonna play man-to-man. That you knew where we was gonna be, but it was your job to beat us. But those guys was you know, great athletes, and we led the conference several times there on pass defense because teams didn't want to throw, you know what I mean? They'd rather run the ball than to throw.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, especially back then. I mean, you had teams like the Dolphins that won Super Bowl VII and I think threw seven passes during the game. But you get to the 75 season, which I think that 75 Bengals team was just as talented as the two Bengals teams that, you know, in future years after that went to the Super Bowl. You guys lost a close game to Oakland, 31-28. What was the Bengals-Steelers rivalry like back then? Because you guys were a great team. It's just it seemed like you always ran into the Dolphins, Raiders, or Steelers who were maybe greater teams.
Hey, we did. Hey, one thing is that football is a game of matchups, you know what I'm saying? That we matched up well with the Steelers. Even though we had all the great athletes, we had the no-name guys, really. But we matched up well because of our speed and quickness and our ability to play man-to-man across the board because we played the Swan, the Star Wars, and all those guys man-to-man. We didn't zone them. We man-to-man them. You understand what I mean? Just like we did everybody else because we thought that we had the best secondary in the conference. So we played them pretty well. You understand what I mean? Most of the time during my career that we beat them one time a year. If I can recall, they never dominated us twice a year. Very seldom, as I can recall. You understand? It has been a long time. But we would usually beat them at home. When we go up there, they would beat us. So, except for the year they had that dominant team, you know what I'm saying? Didn't lose a game. So, this, we messed up pretty well with them there. We was not afraid of Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I mean, we get the 1976, so you kind of touched on this before. I know you asked for a trade. Was it during or before the 76 season? You want to go through the little disagreement you had with the Brown family?
Hey, well, I didn't disagree with the Brown family. Did I just agree with the salary that I was being paid and the salary that I was being offered? Because, see, I was going to the Pro Bowl every year that Mel Blunt and all those guys were there, and we talked, you understand? The Mel was making way more than I was. I was doing more for my team. I was doing just as much for my team as he was doing with his because I run punt returns, kickoff returns, and start no defense. And I was going to Pro Bowl every year that he was going. I don't know how many times that he made it, maybe nine or something like that, maybe eight.
You made it six, didn't you, over like 7 or 8 years?
I made it six over eight there. I went to the Redskins. I made it two back-to-back. I led the league over there. And the reason I led the league over there is because they were throwing passes that I didn't see over there with the Bengals, you understand me? I didn't know why they didn't know me, you know what I'm saying, because nothing changed. And if you can't recall, when I was the Redskins, I had a record going. I think I had seven interceptions in the first seven games, which I saw more balls over there than I ever seen. And I just broke on the ball, as usual. And, you know, I played my game. I took my show on the road, you know what I'm saying? I could have played anywhere in the secondary, you understand me, because that was a lockdown corner.
So what was it like joining the Redskins? I think Jack Kent Cook was the owner then. What was it like, the atmosphere around that team? I know Jack Pardee was the coach.
You know, it was a great organization, you know what I'm saying, but the Bengals would always be my favorite team because I got to know the organization, our coach Paul Brown, Mike Brown. They always were good to me. You understand me? I didn't have any problems. The only problem I ever had with the Bengals, you know, was contract problems, and that's normal. That's natural for an athlete of my caliber. You understand? To make all pro that many times and not be compensated. What I was worth. And that was my only take there. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I wanted to stay with the Bengals. All they had to do was pay me. I would have stayed there forever. You understand me? And, hey, you know, I hear people sometimes say that I wasn't coached, but I wasn't this, that, and the other. That's a lie. There's no place where anybody could say that I wasn't coachable. I worked harder than anybody I know. You know what I'm saying? I have to train three times a day on the off season. When I came to
you
camp,
you made the guys next to you better. I mean, you went to Washington, you became a Pro Bowler, but I think Lavender, the other corner, became one too immediately where he hadn't been before.
Hey, true. Well, the Redskins had all pros back then. We played everybody man to man. We played.
Yeah, you had Kenny Houston. Kenny Houston's one of the great defensive backs that ever lived, also.
The greatest strong safety I ever known. I've seen him do some things that, hey, that was unreal. You know what I'm saying? He could play all aspects of the game, run support, play the pass. He could play it all. You know what I'm saying? And in fact, when I went to the Redskins, we called him the general. Hey, you know, he was the man. Kenny Houston was phenomenal. And then we had Jake Scott, who was all pro. We had Joe Labrador out the corner. And we had myself on the left side, so that we didn't care about passing teams, you know what I'm saying? I mean, we wanted you to pass because we knew we had in the secondary.
Yeah. All right, now you retired after 1981, wasn't it?
Yes, uh-huh.
Okay, after 81, you retired. A lot of players find that they have trouble adjusting to life outside of football. What was that like for you?
I did. You know that I went through drug addiction for about 10 years, you understand me, that I couldn't get it together. And after those 10 years, I volunteered myself to go to treatment to really get help for myself. I did so that I had some good people behind me. I had my family, I had my brother, I had my mentor who was Dan Calloway, and I had a friend in Chattanooga, Tennessee, that really supported me, his name was Jack Lupton, and his wife supported me, and I went back to school. I got my degree, and I worked for the mayor of Chattanooga. From there, I taught school, and I became the head football coach at my alma mater. But I did have my problems for a long time there. I just couldn't get it together because I always thought that I could do anything for myself. You know, so I was headstrong. And I found out that I could not do it by myself, that I needed professional help. So I had good people around me. I had family members. I had brothers. I had mentors, like I said. And I checked myself into treatment. I volunteered myself there for 4 months. After the 4 months was up, I felt like that I wanted to give myself the best chance in life to overcome my addiction, so I volunteered another year in what we call transition. That's getting back in the mainstream of society, you know what I'm saying? Taking responsibility, taking charge of your life, you know what I mean? And doing things a little bit differently. And I did that, so I went back to school. I got my degree in physical education, psychology, and the rest is history. I really have some great support behind me, and shoot, you know, that owe a lot to those people, and I always thank them. I always will. But as of today, Lamar is fine, that I'm doing well, and shoot, you know, I talked to a lot of guys that I played with, and we all reminisce and talk stuff. It's like I talked to Isaac Curtis the other day, Gary Berlin, all those guys, Billy Brook. We talk all the time, so do we stay in touch?
Yeah, I'm trying to get Isaac on here. Gary's trying to get him for me, so you might want to put in a good word for me there.
Hey, well, I tell you what, I will, because as a coach, let me tell you, he's underrated. You know what I mean?
Oh, all those Bengals were because they got caught up. I mean, Kenny Anderson's underrated when you compare him to Terry Bradshaw. I mean,
Hey,
you put a, you switched their situations. Anderson would have won more Super Bowls. He was better than Bradshaw, I think.
Yes, he was. I tell you what, Ken Anderson was phenomenal. He was something else. He could throw the ball as accurate as anybody that I ever played with or played against. But
But
as a
Isaac's
curtain,
problem was, Isaac was so smooth doing everything, it never looked like he was trying.
I tell you what, I'd rather play against Lynn Swan twice a week than play against Isaac Curtis once a year. You know what I mean? Because
well, Lynn Swan, I mean, let's face it, with his numbers, he's kind of like Joe Namath. He's in the Hall of Fame for one or two things he did in the Super Bowl.
Exactly. But I played him 7 years. You know, he never beat me for a touchdown. I played him man to man. So look that up. You know what I mean? So he was great in his own right, taking nothing from him. But Isaac Curtis was better because of his speed, his smoothness, his moves, and stuff like that. Isaac Curtis brought fear in your heart because of that speed that he had. Swan could not outrun me. If you could not outrun me, then I didn't think you could beat me.
Yeah. So does it bother you that you're not in the Hall of Fame?
Well, a little bit it does, because I've been overlooked so long, you understand what I mean? Because I put up the numbers. If you check my stats, there aren't too many people in the Hall of Fame that got defensive backs. I'm talking about corners, not safeties, that have the stats that I have. I led the league in every category that you have. Punt return, kickoff returns, pass interception. I did it all, you understand? I was a complete ball player from top to bottom.
Yeah, and I think if you get your return stats and all that, and you match it up to Deion, blow his ass completely out of the water also.
Oh, yes. Well,
you could tackle somebody.
Yes, I could. Playing for Paul Brown, you understand what I mean? I got to give him a lot of credit. Say that he had a system that was that was phenomenal. And Mike Brown was good also. You understand what I mean? I have any hard feeling toward those guys. In fact, then I always talk to them. I always praise them, you understand, for giving me the chance, the opportunity, you understand, to excel, to become the cornerback that I were. And, hey, you know, in fact, I talked to Mike recently, about 6 months ago, I guess, when he was sick. I called him to see how he was doing, and we had a great conversation. But Mike has always been good to me, you know what I'm saying? If I needed anything, then I called him, and, shoot, you know, he never hesitated, you know what I'm saying? He always sent it to me.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Do you watch the Bengals today? Do you watch the NFL still?
I do. I watch
so what's your take on guys like Pac-Man Jones and Drake Kirkpatrick?
I don't have any comments on those guys because they're getting the job done, I guess. You know what I mean? I have my my take on athletes because I watch the game. I watch techniques. I watch fundamentals. I watch the way they play the game. The enthusiasm and stuff like that. So I don't have anything to say against those guys. You know what I mean? I don't know.
Well, how about this? Let's just do an entire overview. DBs today, do you think technically they're as good as DBs when you played?
No. Hey, not by far, because one thing about back in the day, if you take the Mel Blount, me, Ken Riley, and all of them, we learned techniques and fundamentals. When I see the guys running sideways, running back before the ball is snapping, all kind of stuff like that, I disagree with that. You understand me? My thing is, when you turn sideways, when you turn facing one way, you're vulnerable to the other pass route. We were taught to maintain our distance of 3 yards, 1 yard to the inside, and maintain that and be able to break on anything you can throw. That's the short, the medium, and the deep. You know, we challenged everything back in the day. In fact, we learned how to play several ways, bump and run, catch position, off position, you understand? We played three ways, all dependent on the on the opponent, you understand me, how I had to plan, because I became a student of the game, you understand? I studied my opponent. I had a notebook on all the receivers that I played. I kept a history on how they like to come off the line, how they like to run certain routes, and et cetera. So today I don't see guys doing those things, you understand me? But I see defensive backs, not all of them, because you have some just still standing their back through the set, et cetera. You know, my thing was the Chuck Webber thing was staying that back pedal as long as you can, you understand me? Keep that guy 3 yards in front of you. And once he come out, break that cushion down to 2 yards, you got to come out that back pedal dead. But we was told to keep those guys at bay so that we could break on anything that you run, the short, the medium, and the deep. So that's where I see the differences.
And that difference has got more to do with coaching than the actual player, I would think.
I think so, yes, because those guys, they're teaching the defensive backs today, they evidently they didn't play the game, you know what I mean? They just read things and saw things and running back like this. But we had coaches that taught fundamentals and techniques, how to do this, where to be, how to be there, and et cetera, you know what I mean? It was repetition every day. Every day that we had a routine that we had to go through with Chuck Webber. So, that's the difference. Know that the defensive backs today are not as good as we were back then.
Yeah. I agree with you. I mean, if you look at the guys back then, I mean, especially Kenny Houston, Mel Blount, yourself, Kenny Riley. I mean, and the thing that's bad is when you look at the Hall of Fame, defensive back is probably the position that gets more overlooked than any other position.
Hey, yeah, but let me tell you this. Now the Hall of Fame, let's talk about the Hall of Fame because this really behooves me. I see guys going in the Hall of Fame just because they played on Super Bowl. That don't mean you're great.
Yeah.
Hey, that means that you played on a winning team. And we all know that there's great athletes on all teams, especially myself, you know what I mean? I played on a team that was good, but we wasn't great, you know what I mean? But you have great players there, you know what I mean? Check the history of the Bengals out there, but one guy in the Hall of Fame in the existence of the franchise, that's Munoz, and that was really, really absurd to me.
The Munoz thing was kind of a no-brainer. They couldn't keep him out, and that seems to be the only way a Bengal gets in.
Hey, that's the only way, but it shouldn't be that way because the playing field is not level.
Yeah, I mean, you look at yourself, you got, what, 46, 47 interceptions, you got 13 or 14 returns for touchdowns, you got Kenny Riley who's in the 60s with interceptions, and you guys don't even get brought up anymore.
Hey, but let me tell you, see, this interceptions don't always tell the story, you understand me?
Oh, I know, because if they want to stay away from you, you don't get as many opportunities.
There you go. Look at the great ones. Look at the Mel Blount and the Dion and all those guys. Look at their interception ratio. You understand what I mean? The thing is, when you throw it over there enough times, they're going to get it so many times out of how many times you throw it over there. My thing is that I mastered the deep ball. You didn't throw the deep ball on me, you understand what I mean? Because I went and got that. I am a little bit bitter about it because I see guys going in because they played on Super Bowl team. He played on the Super Bowl, yeah. But what did he do? What kind of numbers did he put up? Was anybody scared of him? Did they fear him? Those are things that you have to monitor in and when you pick up a great player, you understand me? Look at the Mel Blount and the Deion. They didn't want to throw the ball that much, you understand me?
Yeah. You look at like Robert Brazil. Robert Brazil was Lawrence Taylor before Lawrence Taylor was.
Yes, he was. Robert Brazil
was very completely ignored. I mean, his first 8 years, he was a Pro Bowler.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, Robert Brazil was phenomenal. He was the first prototype linebacker that I saw. He was big. He was strong. He was fast. He was dominant. And And I just don't know that some guys just, hey, just get overlooked. And I'm one of those guys.
Yeah, and with Robert, I mean, and it's an absolute joke. I mean, it seriously is, Lamar. I mean, when you look at your stats, and you just mainly when you watch your film, to think that you're not in the Hall of Fame, it's a joke. But then again, the NFL selection process is a joke also.
Hey, yes, it is. You know this. I don't know what kind of system they have set up, but it is not fair. It is not level. The playing field is not level for guys such
as
me.
Well, and then they let Kenny Stabler in, but they don't let him in until after he's dead.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. If he's a Hall of Famer, he's a Hall of Famer.
Exactly. You know, I could call some names, but, you know, I'm not into calling names. You understand me? That's not what I'm into. You understand me? I just talk about my worth like I always have. And I will let anybody know, you understand me, that I put up the numbers. You understand me? That I made the Pro Bowl because I had respect of my peers and the coaches. That's how you pick, you know what I mean? So that why not, that should be a thing for the Hall of Fame, you understand what I mean? But you have a committee that think they know about football, they have good, you know, guys they like, but it's not all about likability, you understand what I mean? It's about what that guy has contributed to his team during his era, you know what I'm saying? Were he the best among the best?
Yeah, well, you definitely were, Lamar, and it was absolute honor to have you on the show today.
Well, hey, call me anytime. I would love to be on the show.
All right. Hey, thanks a lot, Lamar.
I appreciate it, Mike. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. All right, guys, that was Lamar Parrish, former Cincinnati Bengals, six-time Pro Bowl cornerback. Make sure you check us out, thegrillingtruth.net. You can catch all of our interviews. We had Kenny Anderson on last week, Lamar this week, working on Reggie Williams getting on.
I will talk with Alvin Curtis. Make sure he get on there.
All right. We get you and Gary both on it then. We'll get him one way or the other. Thanks a lot, Lamar.
All right. Thank you.
All right.
All right.
All right, guys, make sure you check us out, gruelingtruth.net. So, for Lamar Parrish, I'm Mike Goodpaster. You've been listening to The Grueling Truth, where the legends speak.
Does anybody want breakfast? Guys, let's go. I'm leaving for McDonald's in 5 seconds.
Why didn't you start with that?
The Breakfast Stampede Meal. It's only at McDonald's, where there's a meal for every morning.
Mix and match an egg McMuffin, sausage McMuffin with egg, or sausage McGriddles. Enjoy any two for just $4. Prices and participation may vary. Single item at regular price cannot be combined with combo meal.
Ooh, a fondue set.